Hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special 10-part series on health equity. This series is part of our ongoing podcast series, Weekly Witness, which equips Texans of all faiths for leadership and public policy advocacy and civic engagement. I'm your host, Scott Atnip, and Texas Impact's Outreach Director. You can find more information about today's episode, including blog posts and other resources on our website at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. If you've heard the expression, your lifespan should be a function of your genetic code, not your zip code, you've been introduced to the idea of health equity. In the past 10 years, media attention has focused increasingly on the reality that health status, longevity, and other indicators of physical and emotional well-being are functions of a complex set of factors, including race, income, intergenerational wealth, educational status, and more. It turns out that having health insurance and access to health care are just one piece of the puzzle. And health equity should be a primary concern for faith communities, because local congregations interact with vulnerable people through a variety of outreach activities, so we are well positioned to understand the connections between the many inputs that impact health. Things like access to healthy food, the availability of safe, affordable housing, and even proximity to sources of pollution. Those are all things we call social determinants of health, the things that drive health status. We hope this podcast series inspires you and your congregation to learn more about health equity and the social determinants of health in your local community so that you can be an effective advocate for a healthy future for all Texans. And I guess this week, I have to say, I'm honored to be joined by today's guest because she is Texas Impact's Executive Director, Bea Moorhead. Bea, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. I'm happy to.
So we are wrapping up this series. We have 9 podcasts that have already been posted. And I guess since you're here and you're the boss, I thought I'd start out by asking you why Texas Impact chose to do a series on health equity.
Well, that is a great question.
Thanks.
So, you are very welcome. And thanks for doing such a great job hosting this series, incidentally.
It's been fun.
And the reason that we decided to do the series is, you know, like many other faith communities across the country, Texas Impact has for decades worked on the issue of health insurance, and particularly from the standpoint of getting health care to the most vulnerable people in the community, people who are low income, have particular healthcare needs. But particularly after the Affordable Care Act passed, there started to be a kind of new awareness in the United States that, you know, just because we had made policy that was potentially going to improve health insurance access for millions of Americans didn't mean that that was necessarily going to translate into improved health status. The Episcopal Health Foundation, which is one of the supporters of the work that we do on health and health equity, actually it says a really nice, succinct message. They say what we're interested in is health, not just health care. And health equity is a good sort of entryway into thinking about all the factors that go into making someone healthy, not just whether they happen to have insurance or even whether they get access to health care some way. So that's why we decided to do it. And I would have to say, I think it's been really educational, even for those of us who have been working on the issue for a while.
Yeah, so we've had some great speakers so far, and I've learned a ton over the course of this series, and I hope you all have as well. What do you hope Texans will do with the full series?
Well, I hope that they will. First of all, I would say I hope that they'll listen to the whole series. I know that different people have different, you know, kind of issues that are resonant with them. We know a lot of people are real interested, for example, in maternal and child health, and that maternal health issue is probably pretty popular. But I think the salient point about health equity and social determinants is they all interact with each other. So what hopefully people learn from hearing all of the episodes together is it's not just any one thing. And of course, people have, you know, nobody can work on everything all at one time. So you gotta pick your battles or pick your area where you can make the most impact. But understanding how your particular area of focus interacts with others can improve the way that you work in your area. And also it creates opportunities for synergies that help other people as well. So hopefully we create kind of a virtuous cycle there.
Yeah, so listen to all of them, share them with your congregations, make sure you're getting this content out as widely as you can. So we've been talking in the series about social determinants of health, and you've mentioned that a couple of times already. But you and the Texas Impact team recently returned from the Global Climate Talks, the COP Talks, and so you're excited to introduce a new term today, ecological determinants of health. What is that and why is it important?
So, yeah, I am excited to introduce it. And you actually mentioned one topic that constitutes an ecological determinant of health. That would be whether you are near a source of air pollution. Ecological determinants, just as the name says, are things that impact your health that aren't socially determined. Like, they're not financial, they're not, race-based or gender-based or anything like that. They have to do with the environment or the natural world around you. Some of them are things that culture can impact. So, for example, whether you live near air pollution is produced by people, and people decide who lives in what area. So some of that is kind of a combination of ecological and social. But I don't know about you, but I'm really congested today, and it's because of the cedar. Well, the cedar pollen is not something any human being really has much control over, and that's an ecological determinant of health as well. So it can be anything from human-induced or human-caused pollutants or human-induced nice things too, like green space and blue skies, to the presence of germs in some areas of the world and not others, or the presence of that cedar pollen. So those are all things that are ecological determinants of health. They kind of underpin the social determinants because, for example, if the environment is not conducive to certain kinds of buildings, certain kinds of food production, other things like that, then that impacts how culture develops. So those are all ecological determinants. The underlying one for all of them is climate. And climate change is going to turn out to be kind of the ultimate ecological determinant of health for everyone on the planet.
So who's driving these conversations about the ecological determinants of health?
I think there are a couple of different constituencies for that. One of them we would kind of broadly call environmental justice advocates. These would be people who would be focused on kind of local sources of pollution. A lot of times, Mothers for Clean Air would be a good example of a constituency that is focused on the impact of air pollution on children's health, particularly asthma and asthma in children. But at a broader level, when we get to the issue of climate change, the people who are driving the discussion of ecological determinants are worldwide health experts, I guess, health thinkers. In particular, the World Health Organization and their partnership with The Lancet, which is a medical journal, in creating the Lancet Climate Change and Health Countdown, which is a annual report ever since the Paris Agreement that is tracking how climate is impacting human health and how climate and its attendant ecological determinants are going to impact human health into the future. The Lancet just released their 2019 annual countdown report, and here's what it had to say. A child born today will experience a world that is more than 4 degrees warmer than the pre-industrial average. That would be degrees Celsius, so that's about twice that much Fahrenheit. With climate change impacting human health from infancy and adolescence to adulthood and old age, across the world, children are among the worst affected by climate change. Downward trends in global yield potential for all major crops, tracked since 1960, threaten food production and food security. Children are among the most susceptible to diarrheal disease and experience the most severe effects of dengue fever. And trends in climate suitability for disease transmission are particularly concerning. So right away, climate change is producing an environment that is less hospitable to human thriving, more hospitable to the thriving of antagonists like bacteria and disease. Through adolescence and beyond, air pollution, principally driven by fossil fuels and exacerbated by climate change, damages the heart, lungs, and every other vital organ. And these effects accumulate over time and into adulthood, with global deaths attributable to ambient fine particulate matter remaining at 2 to 9 million in 2016, and global air pollution deaths reaching 7 million. So air pollution, there's something that people are susceptible to locally. And also, you know, unfortunately, as we say, the air doesn't know where the national and state boundaries are. So air pollution from one country impacts people from another country. A good example of that right now would be people in Australia and people in New Zealand, for example. And then later in life, families and livelihoods are put at risk from increases in the frequency and severity of extreme weather conditions. And women are the most vulnerable across a range of cultural contexts. Temperature and heat waves are increasingly limiting the labor capacity of various populations. And in particular in the United States, we should take note of this. Southern areas of the United States lost 15 to 20% of potential daylight work hours during the hottest month of 2018. So climate change is also going to end up impacting livelihoods for families, which will have, that will then create all of those social determinant problems that we've talked about in other episodes.
Yeah, so that does seem really overwhelming that we have been talking about these economic inequalities and all these other social determinants, and now we're adding ecological determinants too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The reality is everything's interconnected, and we can't really talk about those social determinants without having to walk over and talk about the ecology and the environment that underpin the cultures and communities that make those social determinants real.
All right. Hey, B, thanks for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with you.
You're listening to Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special podcast series on health equity. Texas Impact is Texas's oldest and largest interfaith advocacy network. We work for freedom, justice, and opportunity for all people. We advance public policies that are consistent with broadly held religious social teachings by mobilizing people of faith to talk to policymakers and to other members of their communities. To find out more and get involved, go to our website, www.texasimpact.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Reimagining Justice is made possible by the generous support of Methodist Healthcare Ministries of South Texas, serving humanity to honor God by improving the physical, mental, and spiritual health of those least served in the Rio Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a private, faith-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to creating access to healthcare for the uninsured in South Texas through direct services, community partnerships, and strategic grant making. Reimagining Justice is also supported by the DentaQuest Partnership for Oral Health Advancement, revolutionizing oral health to create an effective and equitable system that results in improved oral health and well-being for everyone. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Texas Impact and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors. If you appreciate this podcast, we hope you will consider financially supporting Texas Impact with a monthly contribution. You can donate securely and easily on our website, texasimpact.org. And now, back to our program.
Welcome back. Bea, thanks for staying with us. I hope you really enjoyed hearing your voice during our sponsor break right there. So one of the questions that our folks always ask, and you know this is true, is what can we do? So let's start with what can state policymakers do about ecological determinants, especially relating to climate?
Well, there's definitely ecological determinants that are very much within state policy purview. I'm thinking particularly about air emissions, keeping the water supply safe, pollution. Those are things that the state level lawmakers and state agencies have a lot to say about. It's also possible for state policymakers to regulate industries that have a global footprint. So drilling in the Permian Basin, pipelines, those are things that will impact the climate even beyond where the immediate area that the environmental activity takes place. But you're right, it is hard for state and local policymakers sometimes to feel like they have a lot of agency with respect to climate change, because it seems like such a big issue and so much of it is happening kind of outside their policy frame of reference. The reality is policymakers at the state and local levels are going to need to focus on adaptation to climate as an ecological determinant of health. In the future, it would be great if we could wave a wand and take our climate back to how it was pre-industrial, but that's not going to happen. We are going to be experiencing extreme climate change, probably, certainly significant climate change. And that is going to have an impact on human health. And it's time to start planning for it now.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, for example, insect-borne diseases are going to be more prevalent in North America than they used to be. Things like Zika, which was a big crisis in Texas a couple of years ago, and also things like encephalitis. Also, we should be thinking now about the mental health impacts of climate change. When people suddenly feel disenfranchised, estranged from the environment that they've been used to, they experience different kinds of mental health crises. This was the first time this climate negotiations that we went to in Madrid in December was the first one where there was a significant mental health focus, talking about climate change as a source of everything from depression and anxiety to kind of a form of PTSD. So state and local policymakers do need to be thinking now about what the implications of changing climate are going to be on human health. And while, of course, we all want to do everything we can to mitigate climate change, we need to be thinking about how we're going to adapt so that we can be resilient in the future as well.
So are there any special roles for faith communities with respect to ecological determinants of health?
Well, one of them, of course, is advocacy always. But with respect to ecological determinants, there's a couple of particularities. One is disaster response. So our faith communities often are participating in disaster response already. It's important to remember when we're responding to disasters that they are determinants of health, not just determinants of housing. So the same hurricane that causes someone to lose their home, lose their job, lose their car, lose their stuff, also may cause them to lose their medicine. It may cause them to lose their doctor. It may cause them to lose whatever fragile stability they have in their chronic condition. So those health issues go right along with disaster response. And finally, I'd say pastoral care, that the ecological crisis is causing real trauma for people all over the world. And as people of faith, we're called to respond not just by advocating for different policies, not just by bringing food and water and blankets, but also by sitting with people and praying with them and helping them work their way through what's going to be a really wrenching moment for humanity.
Yeah, as somebody who lives in the hurricane zone, I know all of those things are very important things that congregations should be preparing for increasingly. Coming back to the advocacy piece, we are in the legislative interim. Is there any advice that you might give people in terms of talking to their legislators about this issue?
Yeah, I actually would say it's really important right now for anyone who has had the experience of being with people, or if they themselves have had the experience of going through any kind of ecological catastrophe, large or small, if they've been involved in disaster response, if they've housed someone who has been fleeing an extreme weather event, if they themselves have had that weird experience of turning on the water and having it be a color when it comes out of the tap, anything like that, now is the time to talk to legislators about that. We're far enough away from the next legislative session at this point that legislators can take the time to process information that constituents bring them and develop thoughtful responses to it. People who wait until the legislature's already in session and, you know, this we've already set hit go, it's hard for legislators to think about even pretty defined issues in that short period of time, let alone to kind of think about all of nature.
So now's the time to be telling personal and community stories, not necessarily advocating for policy change.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to remember that there's not, climate isn't a policy any more than, I mean, kind of winding up our series here, health isn't a policy. Health is impacted by myriad policies. Some of them are environmental policies. Some of them are economic policies. Some of them are related to the way we regulate different industries. All of those policies combine to make the reality that causes a person to get up in the day and be able to function or not. So legislators can't make a policy that is the climate. They need all of the feedback from constituents that they can get to move forward thoughtfully and wisely.
So we're now wrapping up 10 weeks of this podcast series, and we have certainly covered some weighty topics. And spoiler alert, like Texas is not doing all that great on many of them from a policy perspective. And so it's been kind of depressing hearing some of this. What gives you hope for the future?
Wow. What gives me hope for the future actually is the idea of adaptation and resilience. I think people are so strong, and mostly they want what's best for each other and their communities. And I think in the future, we're going to face some tough times together. And I think that people will rise to the challenge when it starts to feel like a real challenge for them. So that's what gives me hope. What makes me frustrated is it shouldn't have to be that so much bad stuff has to happen before people remember, oh yeah, I do mostly love my community. I do want to rise to the challenge. I wish that we could do those things before the house is on fire so that we could spend more time, you know, hanging out in the yard, enjoying the house.
Right. I'm going to end it on a positive note. I have found hope during the course of the series and over the course of the last few months with the number of congregations, with the number of people of faith who are digesting this information and sharing it and really engaging in deep levels, having conversations with Sunday school classes and small groups and going out and meeting with their legislators. So I want to say thanks to all of you who have participated in this process with us. I'd encourage you to share this content with your friends, and let's keep moving forward to create the community that we all hope to have. Any last thoughts from you?
No, thanks for doing such a good job hosting this podcast, Scott.
That is so kind. Thank you so much. It has been fun. And if you have ideas for future podcasts, feel free to reach out. Let us know. My email address is scott@texasimpact.org. But B, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for the vision of this podcast and for all of the work that you do each and every day to make Texas a better place. Friends, thank you all for joining in. Thanks for being a part of the conversation with us. We'll continue to release more information on the Weekly Witness podcast feed, so I hope you'll keep an eye out for that. Until then, we hope that you'll go rate and review the podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Share this content with your friends. And if you have made it this far in the program, you clearly support the work of Texas Impact and the Weekly Witness community. So make sure you're doing so financially by becoming a member at texasimpact.org/join. Thanks for tuning in. We'll look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks, friends.
Reimagining Justice is a production of Texas Impact and the Texas Interfaith Center for Public Policy, engineered by David Vassallo, executive producer Bea Moorhead. Our series is recorded in Austin, Texas.